The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
It's time now for a Smart Plain Talk regarding politics, Israel, and the law. This is the Victory Hour with Andrew Parker of Parker Daniels Keyboard. Wise counsel, winning results. Now, here's your host, Andrew Parker.
I'm impressed with my attorney, Bernie. I'm impressed with his influential friends. He's got very big connections, and I follow his directions.
It's Sunday, 4 o'clock, and that means it's the best hour in radio of the week. It is the Victory Hour, and thank you. Thank you once again for joining us as we talk each week politics, Israel, and the law. Speaking of Israel, I just returned from a 10-day tour of the Jewish state. And as I have said to a number of people, the Jews in the state of Israel and others, including Arabs, Druze Arabs and others, are fighting at the point of the spear for humanity, for the difference between an uncivilized bastion of tyranny and heinous acts and the civilized world of equality and freedom and liberty and respect for human life. Palestinian people have been under the hand, the fist of corrupt leaders, but even worse, Nazi-like leaders, as we have seen most recently for many decades. And they have been the first and foremost victims of these leaders. And they are now being, the leadership is now being destroyed. And that needs to happen. And it needs to happen to completion. It's a very clear message, and everyone in the West should be supporting that message, including the United States, at the highest levels, and in particular the President of the United States. While he has spokesmen making some very strong statements in support of Israel, the President has weakened, unfortunately, and he needs to be a leader on this subject for civilized society, and nothing short of it. We are joined by someone today, a special, very special guest on the Victory Hour, who understands this very, very well. And he is part of those in Congress that are speaking out in support of the State of Israel as the beacon of light for civilized society, for concepts of humanitarian support. And that is what the State of Israel is doing. And that's Congressman Brad Finstead, 1st Congressional District here in the great state of Minnesota. He was first elected in a special election in August of 2022 and was sworn in 3 days later, only to run again and be elected to his first full term. And the congressman has done an outstanding job since that time. You know that the 1st Congressional District runs along the southern border of Minnesota, bordering in large part Iowa. And Congressman Finstead is a fourth-generation farmer. He knows of what his district is all about in southern Minnesota, and he is representing it very, very well. But he's gone beyond his work as a farmer, for sure, as he understands what's at stake in the Middle East and what's at stake here on domestic policy issues. And we're going to talk to him about those right now. Congressman Fidstead, thank you so much for joining us once again on the Victory Hour.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
So I wanted to talk first about, we have an upcoming election, and members of Congress seem to always be running as they're up for election every 2 years. I know you fit the first congressional district very well, but it's always been, over the last many years, it's been a hard-fought battle between Republican and Democrat in the first district. I fully expect you to do quite well this go-around in November. But the reason I bring up the election is because some issues have really lit the light on in terms of rising to the top of important domestic policy issues. Immigration is one of them. Is that an issue that resonates in the first?
Yeah, Andrew, I think it is. I mean, I think it's an 80%+ issue. People in southern Minnesota understand that if we don't have a border on the southern part of our country, and quite frankly, you know, even the northern border, we become weak and we become vulnerable. One of the things that we pride ourselves on in southern Minnesota is that we're deep in common sense. And if you just play common sense on this issue, I mean, no one in their right mind thinks it's healthy for our country to have over 10 million people coming across our border in the South illegally. And there will be no problems with that. So these are people that are coming across our border that we, job providers in this country who desperately need new people to work for them cannot hire. These are people that are crossing our border that when they come to the footsteps of our hospitals and our healthcare facilities, we will take care of them. There will be uncompensated care and there will be a stress on the social programs in our country. And quite frankly, we've seen a huge uptick in fentanyl and drug use, sex trafficking, and just, again, common sense says this is not sustainable. This is not right. A country without a border is not a country. So we have to do our job and we have to fix this problem.
Yeah, no question about it. It has become, and it should have been in the last few elections, but it now has become one of the leading, if not the leading issues that give people concern. And the disaster that has been Joe Biden's administration over the past 3 years has brought it to the forefront. In addition to immigration, you would think that rural America and a rural district, in many respects, as the first congressional district is, would not have the crime issues or be concerned about crime as much as some of the inner city districts are. How does that play out in the first?
We all have become a border community. And I can give you story after story, but the most compelling story that I've heard from the district that I have the honor to represent is when the chief of police, Jim Franklin of Rochester, the largest city in the southern Minnesota's first district, third largest city in the state of Minnesota, when the chief of police calls me and says, I can tell you a story just to really bring this home for you. When a patrol officer called him and said, listen, we're going to an overdose scene right now, but don't worry, chief, it's just meth. It's just meth.
Yeah.
Because of the increase we've seen with fentanyl and the crazy calls that our police officers are getting called to in communities like Rochester and communities all over Minnesota, we are all border communities right now. And again, to think it doesn't happen in our backyard is putting your head in the sand.
We're talking to Congressman Brad Fidstead, and we're going to talk a bit more about his committee assignments on agriculture, as well as his assignments certainly on armed services. He understands the issues, and he understands the impact and the loss of security that we have here in the United States since Joe Biden has taken over the Oval Office. So when we come back, we're going to focus on those issues and more. Jot this down with your number two pencil and your yellow pad. Next week, I will have the opportunity, hopefully, to talk about my trip to Israel in some more detail with you all, as I was an eyewitness to, not specifically the atrocities, but the locations of the atrocities, and I saw the aftermath. I have pictures, and it was difficult, harrowing. But the Jews in the state of Israel, they're a resilient people. I saw a lot of dancing and singing as they say, "We will sing again." And they are taking care of what needs to be taken care of in protection of Judeo-Christian values. Every day we talk about it, and on Sundays we bring it together as a summary on the Victory Hour, this week no different, with Congressman Brad Finstead from the 1st Congressional District here in the state of Minnesota. Make sure to stay with us. We'll be back with the congressman. We're going to talk about some important policy issues of the day. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. I'm Andrew Parker, and we are back talking to a member of the House of Representatives who has some real insight. He has a classic representative of an agricultural and more rural district with a relatively large city in Rochester in the 1st Congressional District and a hub of health care in the entire country. And so it's an interesting district, and it's one that has an amalgam of interests. And Brad Finstead, our special guest today on the Victory Hour, adds something to it with his military background as well as his committee work on armed services. Congressman, let's talk about that for a minute. The U.S. military, I think it's safe to say, is being stretched. It's being stretched because in the last 3 years, unlike the 4 years prior to that, the enemies of the United States have decided to attack. They've attacked allies. They've attacked neighbors. And it has created hot spots around the world. So what are you talking about on the Armed Services Committee in terms of whether we can handle all of that in addition to dealing with Russia and China and just the general spectrum?
Yeah, so much of what we talk about is really how do we prepare for the next 30 years? You know, I'm an old Reagan Republican. I think that we can have peace in this world through our strength. And we have to assess our strengths right now, everything from our war fighter in regards to recruitment and retention. What's the morale of our war fighter right now? And then on top of that, what does our defense industrial base look like? You know, we used to be a leader in turning out some of the most innovative, high use of technology weaponry. And others around the globe have caught up to us. And they've caught up to us for a couple different reasons. One, some stale investments over the last 20 years. On top of that, a defense industrial base that has been decimated in workforce shortages. You know, our shipyards can't find welders anymore to make aircraft carriers or our Virginia class submarines. So we're struggling to put out some of the equipment and the timeframes we used to be able to do that. And so we worry about getting outpaced and outproduced by other countries. But we, you know, from a preparedness standpoint, especially when it comes to our war fighters, is we again got to incorporate common sense. The COVID mandates and what we did to our soldiers was not a healthy move on behalf of our federal government. And we got to restore that faith back with our men and women serving our military that we're not going to, you know, put them in undo unnecessary harm's ways with these silly mandates that aren't completely vetted. And then on top of that, we have to support them, making sure that they have a quality of life that is, you know, with dignity in regards to their barracks and the way they're housed and fed. On top of, you know, how are they equipped? Are we making sure that, you know, we're not using duct tape and JB Weld to keep some equipment together, but we're actually investing in modern day cutting edge warfighting equipment that provides them a strategic advantage? And that's really what the committee's focus has been about.
Have we had an issue? I've seen some reporting on this. Have we had an issue as it relates to recruitment?
So we've seen some numbers. So we're doing okay. But you know, the worry is the next 10 to 15 years, and you look at the generational change we're going through. You know, a lot of us our age had grandma and grandpa or mom and dad or a brother that served in our military. We understood the value of service to our neighbor. Now you look at, you know, where we are now in regards to our population and the movement that we've seen in our country, quite frankly, very alarming that there has been a growing sentiment that there's a little distrust with law and order. We're seeing some confusion in regards to, you know, supporting our law enforcement. When we hear movements of defund the police and others, it cracks the foundation of who we are as a country and what it means to serve. So we have to restore that dignity of service and that hope that, you know, our young folks will find an opportunity and an avenue to serve our country. And that all comes to the marketing, advertising, talking about what it means to serve in our military, what awesome opportunities exist. And so the other piece we have to take into account is, you know, for right or for wrong, for the last 30 years, our military has been a part of maybe a war or a movement that is a much different atmosphere than we will see in the next 30 years. You know, you've seen the onset of drones and cybersecurity, cyberspace, things like the Space Force have come about. I mean, we're seeing a new cutting edge, new day when it comes to the innovative new weapons and fighting strategies of other countries. And so it's going to take a whole new type of approach and mindset for the next generation of warfighters. So we got to speak to them and make sure they understand the opportunities exist.
Let's shift gears a minute back to some domestic policy items. You sit on the Ag Committee. I know that there are still some family farms in the 1st Congressional District, although from years gone by, the numbers have shifted dramatically, unfortunately. What is going on at the Ag Committee, and how is it impacting the farmers in the 1st?
Yeah, well, first of all, agriculture is one of the cornerstones of our economic opportunities in southern Minnesota, and quite frankly, in Minnesota as a whole. And I mean, we have counties in southern Minnesota. We have more pigs than people.
Yeah.
And so we are really called to, and we take serious the task that we're called to feed our neighbors and feed the world. And we do it great in southern Minnesota. So the Ag Committee is working on, you know, a couple of key pieces of legislation right now that I think are really important to folks in southern Minnesota. The Farm Bill, that is a 5-year bill that provides some security and some opportunity for farmers to, you know, have those guardrails, things like crop insurance, you know, essentially insurance products that helps us produce the food and fiber that we need to feed and fuel the world. On top of that, you know, some common sense legislation to make sure our industry and our national security is protected. There's foreign ownership of land. We've seen more and more foreign entities trying to buy up farmland, which could provide a strong risk to our national security. So we have to get tough with that. And then we also have to make sure states like California and Massachusetts aren't using their interstate commerce clauses to, you know, hamper and really dictate the terms on which we have to then farm and grow our products just to meet their state's own interests. So we have to restore some interstate commerce and some sense in regards to how are we dictating the terms for how we grow our crops and produce our food. Is it, you know, real fact-based science, or is it going to be political science? And that's the type of work that's in front of our committee right now.
Well, I know you're doing a great job on that committee, and you're delivering for the 1st Congressional District. I want to talk for a moment about the United States. You know, listen, Congressman, as we have spoken before, you are one of 535 people in the entire country of 330 plus million of us that has the good fortune, ability, authority, empowerment to cast a vote. And your vote is very important because there are so few in Congress. And one of the things that we cast our vote on or give our voice to is what the issues are around the world that we face. Obviously, as I mentioned previously, I just got back from the State of Israel, and the war going on in Israel is so damaging, and it's so difficult, and it's something that Israel did not want, has never wanted. But they were thrust in it through heinous atrocities brought not just to their border, but inside their border. Babies beheaded, burned alive, women raped and then shot in the head. I can't get into the other atrocities that I have seen video of, and you may have as well. What can the United States do, and what should the United States do as it relates to the Israel-Palestinian war presently?
Well, we need leaders of courage and leaders that are bold on this issue. Any leader in our country right now that is screaming for a ceasefire, we had a ceasefire. It was October 6th. It was October 5th. It was October 4th. As you pointed out, Andrew, this was the worst of the worst committed on the Jewish people in Israel. And for us to be nothing but vocal, strong, bold supporters of the Jewish people, not just of Israel, but of the world, because we see this persecution, this anti-Semitism spreading onto our shores. We've seen it in colleges and universities, and we realize those of us, I guess, that look at the world the way I do, we realize how damaging and how this can really snowball into things that we don't want to see. So we need to make sure that we're there and we're supportive of our strongest ally in the Middle East, that we are providing and lending a hand in any which way possible that the Jewish people and the folks of Israel are asking us to provide. But we cannot sit back and just try to be apologetic to what happened and to try to send warm thoughts and happy trails. We need to do whatever we can to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and Hamas and the Hamas leadership has promised that it will happen again. And so if they are not destroyed, if they are not wiped out, eliminated entirely, it will happen again. You can count on it. As Yasser Arafat said many, many times, they play the long game. They're going to be around and they will be here and they will wait for their opportunity. And they did that. And on October 7th, you saw what we got. And we got that by ignoring what they had been saying they were going to do for years and years. And Iran now is in that position, and they have said what they're going to do over years and years. And they are at the core foundation of all of the calamity that goes on in the Middle East. It's the Victory Hour. We're talking to Congressman Brad Finstead. And we'll be back after this short break. We're going to talk about the Republican Party here in the state of Minnesota and whether Republicans have the ability to expand their numbers in the House. We're going to talk a little politics. And yes, we're not going to miss out on the opportunity of talking about Bidenomics and the economy. We're going to ask Brad Finstead about his thoughts as it relates to that and how people are doing down there in the 1st Congressional District with inflation and the like. So make sure to stay with us. This will be a short break. Go to ParkerDK.com, often referred to as an award-winning website. I think you'll like it. Parker Daniels Keyboard, premier law firm downtown Minneapolis. Top litigators. They win. We win. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. We're back. It's the Victory Hour. Thank you once again for joining us. We're with Congressman Brad Finstead, 1st Congressional District, State of Minnesota. We've been talking about a wide range of issues, and the congressman has to get on to some other congressional business. But before he leaves, I wanted to ask him about the Republican chances in the next election here in 2024. As you know, the entire House of Representatives is up for election, and about a third of the Senate is up for election. Congressman, what do you think our prospects are of expanding our control of the House of Representatives? You know, it's virtually a tie.
Yeah, I feel good about our opportunities. We have some great candidates across the country, but moreover, I think the American people are with us. And you see that show up over and over again in the polling. You see that with, us having, you know, probably the most unpopular president of modern day history. And that's, you know, that's probably even longer than modern day history. He is very underwater, unpopular. And then on top of that, you just have family pocketbook issues that our neighbors are feeling and see it in real ways, whether it's high inflation, whether it's gas prices that are volatile, whether it's the 18% increase in prices that we're paying at the grocery store for our foods. We're just seeing it every day in every way. And this is the opportunity for us as, you know, as Republicans, as common sense conservatives, to just give our adult message of what it means to be a limited government, more freedom, less government, common sense when it comes to our border, being strong with our allies across the globe, being, again, you know, folks that can negotiate good trade deals that provide opportunities for us to grow our economy and for us to be an America first, energy first country again, that we can be exporters of our energy instead of importing and becoming vulnerable on the global stage. These are common sense issues that are in our favor. We just need to be able to articulate them to the public. And you know, we feel like we can provide that leadership.
Congressman Brad Finstead, 1st Congressional District, State of Minnesota. That is common sense. And we need more like him in Congress. So send Congressman Finstead back to Washington as a common sense voice fighting for all of us and for the values of America. And these are great values that the world can follow. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us on the Victory Hour today. And I wish you all the best in the coming months, and we'll have you back on again.
That sounds great. Thank you, Andrew.
Congressman Brad Finstead, always a great guest here on the Victory Hour. And, you know, he speaks about important issues, both on the Agriculture Committee that he sits, as well as the Armed Services Committee that he sits on. And these are, you know, one, very domestic related and feeding this country, feeding the world in many respects, the Ag Committee and the work that they do. And the other is protecting our security and making sure that we're ready, fighting ready. And he sits on both those committees, both very important committees. So we thank him once again for joining us today on the Victory Hour. I don't want to lose this opportunity to talk a bit more about my recent trip to Israel. I was there for 10 days. I was in part visiting my son. And during one complete day, I traveled from Tel Aviv down to the southern part of Israel and to the border of Gaza and Israel. I was fortunate enough to be traveling with someone who had connections and relationships with the military in Israel, and we visited internally a few of the military bases including the main base, overseeing the entire Gaza envelope. I also visited a number of kibbutzim, which are kibbutzes along the Gaza border that were attacked on October 7th in the wee hours of the morning. And saw the site of these heinous acts that we have been talking about on the Victory Hour and that you have been reading about and hearing about. I also went to the location of the Nova Music Festival, where there were literally hundreds of individual vigils set up at the location of where the bodies were found throughout this, I would say, somewhat wooded prairie. And I sobbed. I stood there viewing. Now these vigils had candles, little stones, but also usually a pole with greenery and a picture of the person who was found dead at that location. And these pictures were pictures of 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 24, 28, 30-year-olds. People in the prime of their life, all of them smiling and joyous in these pictures, men and women, girls and boys. And to see the humanity cut down, cut short in their lives, and the manner in which it was done as well, just was too much to handle. And you can feel it in the country in many respects. The sorrow, the sadness, the daily pall that falls over the population who is re-terrorized each day as the hostages remain, the 130-some odd hostages remain in captivity even now. It's simply difficult to put into words. But again, the resilience of the people of the state of Israel, who are continuing to improve everything from A, well, really from A to Z in the country, innovation, delivery to the poor, mental health issues, taking care of one another, delivering to one another goods and services, opening your business and providing what you can to others. It was amazing to see. Along with, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the singing and dancing, which was prevalent from the north to the south. Because after I was in the south in Gaza, I traveled to the north and to the Golan Heights, looked into Syria from the top of a lookout tower. Hill, really, it wasn't a tower, but there was a makeshift wooden area that you climbed. And when I was in the south, as well as when I was in the north, there was artillery fire right near where I was. Could hear it every 30 seconds to a minute for an extended period of time. And it brought things into reality. 75 years Israel has been in existence, and it has populated the desert amazingly. And it has done it in an area with great enemies. And they have never changed their intention from day one, and that is to destroy the Jewish country, the Jewish state, and destroy all Jews in it. From the river to the sea is a statement of destruction of Jews, to eliminate Jews from the world. That is what the statement historically has meant, and that is what it means today. To date, it has not been successful. God willing, it shouldn't be, ever. But the Israelis know what they need to do at this point, and they must be allowed to complete the work. After this short break, we'll be back for our final segment. I'm going to talk a little bit more about my trip to Israel, about the coming weeks on the Victory Hour, and about the fact that my prediction for 2024, although many people disagree with it, stays as it is. Joe Biden will defeat Donald Trump in the 2024 election. The Electoral College impacting the vote tremendously. Yeah, wait till July or August. When people will start to come around and agree with what I am suggesting. Stay with us. Go to ParkerDK.com. Go to MyPillow.com and pick up some bedwear. Some of the best anywhere. It's top quality and great, great prices. MyPillow.com. Or give a call. 1-800-334-8902, 1-800-334-8902, and make sure to use the offer code VICTORY for all of your home goods provided by MyPillow. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Wowza, we're back. It's the Victory Hour. I'm Andrew Parker, and they are cleaning out Gaza. Since 2006 and the election of Hamas by the Palestinian people, and then the ongoing support of Hamas by the Palestinians, it has created a cesspool of uncivilized hate, which has reared its ugly head now in the last few months, murdering Jews, taking hostages and captives, and engaging in atrocities that are too heinous to further mention or talk about, although we must. While I was in Israel, I talked to some soldiers who came in after the killings, just hours, and fought off some of the murderers. and their stories were difficult to hear. And these were bright-eyed young people. I mean, the IDF soldiers, they are 18 to 22 in many respects, or most often, I should say. Many are older than that, who are commissioned for a longer period of time and volunteer for a longer period of time. Many are. Including my cousins, a few of which are still in the IDF, in their 30s and 40s. It is a citizen military. And they are fighting for their homes. They are fighting for their neighborhoods. They're fighting for their communities, their cities, and their country. And they have come together in a very unified way. The Jewish community doesn't unify very often, but when it comes to this, there is no left-wing party. The left, center, and right have all come together. And regardless of what Joe Biden says, or thinks, or Kamala Harris says, or thinks, about this conflict, while most things have two sides, and you could argue either side, you cannot argue the Palestinian side and the Palestinian support for Hamas, and the cheering, and the 75% who claim they agree with the October 7th attacks. And this came well after everyone understood what those attacks meant. No misunderstanding or miscommunication. So when it comes to determining how to respond, Biden needs to be clearer, he needs to be stronger, and he needs not to buckle. But I have no faith or confidence that that will be the case. Peace will come in the Middle East when we don't buckle to hatred and the most uncivilized of values. Peace will come. We are going to be on through the month of March and April as we continue on the congressional parade on the Victory Hour. We started with Glenn Grothman from the state of Wisconsin, 6th Congressional District. Very interesting discussion a couple weeks ago. And now Brad Finstead. Actually, was Grothman on last week? I'm trying to think. Yeah. Yeah, he might have been. I get my weeks mixed up. And now Brad Finstead from the 1st Congressional District in the state of Minnesota. We're going to have Tom Emmer on. We're going to have Angie Craig on. As well as Pete Stauber and Michelle Fischbach. We're going to try to get Kelly Armstrong on, a member of Congress who is running for governor in the state of North Dakota, and also try to get Dusty Johnson on the show, the congressman from the state of South Dakota. So we're going to learn what's happening. And this is Democrats and Republicans. Maybe Dean Phillips will come back on the show and decide that his run for president may not have had the legs he initially thought. I still think Dean Phillips is going to run for governor of the state of Minnesota. I haven't talked to him about it. I don't know. I have no inside info. But I think he's going to. We'll see. I'm sure he's not done with politics. He's got a lot to offer. We don't agree on a lot. but he's got a lot to offer. Listening to the Victory Hour. Another week in the books, and thank you once again for joining us on the Victory Hour. Go to ParkerDK.com. Until next week, I say to you all, have a great week.
He leaves you with these words from Winston Churchill. All the great things are simple, and many can be expressed in a single word.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.